and gender identities, the church, and what the Bible has to say. Let's talk some more with Dr. Preston Sprinkle on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
I'm Steve. Welcome, by the way. You always have a seat at our table, and we're so glad you're here. It's going to be a great hour, and we're all going to learn some things we need to learn and maybe didn't even know we needed to learn them. I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Matthew Porter, our executive producer, is with us. It's only April, but Matthew has already lost a lot of weight. Ooh. Hope. Sorry. Matthew has already lost a lot of hope. And before you send me letters, Matthew wrote that line. And I don't want to be blamed for being insensitive or crass or whatever.
About that comment.
That's me.
Just reading ability.
Our producer, Jinx, is working hard in his little glass booth. In case you didn't know, Jinx has a band. Jinx, do you know what you call a guy who hangs out with musicians?
No.
A drummer. Our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. He's the one who will be editing out all these bad jokes. And Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. We've got a new Key Life app. George says he needs your help in testing out the donate button.
Absolutely.
You know, just make sure it works and stuff like that.
Yeah, it'd be so helpful. You know, and the multiple figures beyond just, you know, single digits are especially helpful.
That's true. And since
quality control, really.
Not having
six-digit
testing.
People get paid for doing this. Food on the table is important. So please check out that app and the donate button. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft, feminine side of the program. Kathy said she hid Easter treats for us all around the office. But I suspect she's just messing with us. So that's it. We have.
You have no faith.
Well, I'm going to look when I get.
I don't have any Easter candy
anyway.
Either.
Yeah, you never know.
And he lost the word hope earlier, so hopefully, he still has love in there.
She lost faith and hope.
Our guest is one of our favorites, Dr. Preston Sprinkle. He is a biblical scholar and international speaker, New York Times bestselling author. He also serves as president of the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. Preston has given talks to thousands of people worldwide on those particular topics, and his latest book, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is Embodied Transgender Identities, the Church and What the Bible Has to Say. We had him on this show, if you will remember, just a few months ago. And when he finished, man, we had so many questions to ask. And so we asked him if he would come on again, and he was kind. A lot of people wouldn't do that. And he is with us again today, and I appreciate that. Preston, I just noticed, and I was telling just earlier, I noticed in First Things this morning, in one of my favorite magazines, that Ryan Anderson's book, it was published in 2018, and it was titled When Harry Becomes Sally, has been removed from Amazon. Is there a chance that's going to happen to you?
First of all, thanks for having me back on. And, you know, people have asked me that question. I sure hope not. And it's it really is extremely odd that his book would be removed. I've read the book right when it came out. I know Ryan. He's a very gracious guy. It's a very, very well argued, thorough book. You know, there's things that disagree with it, like any book, you know, but it doesn't make sense that Amazon would still sell Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf and not Ryan T. Anderson's book. Like, did they only sell a book they agree with? If so, I have some questions. but it just doesn't make sense. But no, my book is still, is still available on Amazon, as are many other books on the conversation, but we'll see.
If you were angry enough and wanted to make a statement and stand for Jesus and all, you could remove your book from Amazon, make an obscene gesture and say, if you won't keep my friend's book, you won't have my book. I am jesting. I wouldn't do that with mine either. Listen, for those who haven't, who weren't with us the first time, and if you weren't, let me recommend that you go back into the archives and view that first program, because we were drinking from a fire hydrant. All of us learned a lot more than we thought we were going to learn, or even thought we should learn, about transgenderism. And Preston is articulate. He's kind. He gets grace. And but kind of review a little bit of the book and tell us why you wrote it, and then we'll get into some questions.
Yeah, so the book Embodied, it's a, I would say, a thorough discussion about the trans conversation. And there's two main threads that are woven throughout the book. Number one is are all the concepts that the trans conversation interacts with. You know, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be male and female? What about people that are born, you know, with a blend of male and female parts? You know, what do we do with people that wrestle with gender dysphoria? Is it possible, scientifically or biblically, to be, you know, quote unquote, born in the wrong body, and so on and so forth? There's a lot of concepts that this discussion raises. A lot of practical questions about whether you should use the pronouns of somebody, even if those pronouns don't match their biological sex. Is it ethical to transition from one biological sex to the other? So then we can go on and on and on. There's many, many questions this conversation raises, but there's also questions about human beings. How do we love people well? How do we understand somebody's unique experience? And how do we manifest both the truth and the grace of Jesus toward a group of people that have often experienced nothing but harassment and shame from the church? And so trying to do both well isn't always easy, but that's my attempt. It's one of the reasons why it took me 5 years to write the book, because getting the understanding the concepts well, being accurate in what you say is not easy, but also having the right tone and pastoral posture isn't easy as well. So we'll see how it goes. I'm excited that the book is out now, though.
Listen, you guys get this book. It's this is not going to go away tomorrow. And it's not a passing fad. It's something more, far more than that. And however you feel, and by the way, I have some strong feelings on gender. We'll probably speak to some of those during this program. But aside from that, our responsibility as the church is to be sensitive, to be kind, to listen more than we talk. That's kind of what Jesus did. And if we're going to follow him, we got to do it his way. And that's hard sometimes, because this is so new, especially to an old guy like me. Like, the first time I hear about it, I want to say, what? Mm-hmm. And I'm learning. And Preston has helped me learn to be kind and to be loving. And even if you have strong views like I have, people got caught up in a very, I think, bad kind of thing. And even more compassion needs to be given because of that. But we'll, Preston, we have about a minute in this segment, so you can start on it and we'll finish it up on the other side after we pay for this thing. But what does the Bible have to say about this subject?
The Bible doesn't say a lot directly about the subject, but it says a whole lot indirectly. And what I mean by that is the Bible doesn't directly address, you know, how to manage your, you know, gender dysphoria, this distress that some people might feel between their body and their mind with regard to the biological sex. But the Bible does say a lot about what it means to be human. In Genesis 1:27, it says that God created us in his image, which is kind of a big deal for a Christian worldview of what it means to be human. We bear God's image. But that same verse also says he created us male and female in his image. So our biological sex is not arbitrary. It's not some insignificant shell that covers the real us. It is an intrinsic part of human identity and how we bear God's image. So, and that truth is shot throughout scripture that our bodies matter to God, not just our bodies, but our sexed bodies. And so that's a significant contribution to this conversation.
Well, and there's more. We'll get into that on the other side. Right. We're talking to Dr. Preston Sprinkle. Embodied transgender identities, the church and what the Bible has to say. And don't you touch that dial. This is something you need to hear. If we're going to be involved and we're here for them, we better learn the language that is spoken and the hearts that are broken and the places where we're called with love and grace. So, if you turn off the dial, you'll get the fever and die.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
We're talking with Dr. Preston Sprinkle, one of our favorite people. This is a voice that you need to hear, not just in the gender areas, but in other areas. It's a voice that is gracious and kind and forgiving, but doesn't back off on truth that has to be spoken. And this latest book is certainly a book that does all of that. It's called Embodied Transgender Identities, The Church and What the Bible Has to Say. Preston pointed out that when he was on the last time, the Bible never came up, which might give you an idea of our spirituality. But at any rate, you started on the other side of the break and you quoted Genesis and the image and male and female and the importance of sexual identity in that. But go ahead and complete that. I cut you off.
Yeah, so the Genesis 1:27, our sexed embodiment as male and female is intertwined with how we bear God's image. And I think that that's very clear in Genesis 1:27. But just in case somebody says, well, that's just one verse, you know, what about the rest of the Bible? Well, first of all, that verse is pretty significant. It's one of the only verses they explicitly say that says that we bear God's image, which is a significant theological statement. But all throughout scripture, we see the rest of the Bible, all various biblical authors reflect that same idea that our bodies, they matter for human identity. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 6 and 7, especially chapter 6, I mean, he's constantly referring back to the significance of the body against what seems to be a you know, some kind of philosophy that had entered into the, you know, the city of Corinth, and that was trying to teach against the significance of the body. And Paul says, no, as a Jew, as a Jewish Christian, we believe very highly of our bodies. They're not an insignificant part of who we are. We also see several other passages like 1 Corinthians 11, where Paul does uphold sex distinctions. You know, crossing over those distinctions is not in line with God's will. We have, of course, the one people often go to is the cross-dressing prohibition in Deuteronomy 22:5. Now, that one, you know, cross-dressing is tricky because clothing can be wrapped up into, you know, it changes from culture to culture. So there is some subjectivity there with what clothing means. But in the ancient world, there were clear distinctions between male and female clothing. It's not like that in the West. There's a lot of crossover. Men and women can wear blue jeans. Even men and women can wear suits and so on. But the whole point of that is the heart, that that clothing is an expression of our how we're trying to identify, whether we resonate with our biological sex and are publicly identifying with that sex. And I think the prohibition there is saying, yes, you are to identify with the biological sex that God has created you as. So this is something that is shot throughout Scripture, and it always maintains a really strong unity between the body and the mind in terms of our sexual identity.
But you, in this book, make it clear, you know, when you come from the Bible, it's black and white, it's clarity, and the things you said are quite clear, but the issue is not that black and white, is it?
Yeah. So the main issue is, you know, even my last statement, some people might think, well, wait a minute, there is a unity in human nature, but what do you do when there's not? Like, what do you do when somebody has a serious disconnect between who they feel like they are on the inside and who their body says they are? And that's what psychologists call gender dysphoria. And that's where the complexity comes. It's like, okay, our bodies matter for human identity. What do you do with people that have just a crippling psychological condition where they can hardly leave the house because they feel like they are living in someone else's body? Like, how do you walk with that person? Now, there's no easy answer to that. I don't think the immediate answer is let's just ditch the body or change the body. I think there's maybe some deeper things we need to work through. But pastorally, man, we need to be walking with people and being listening and being incredibly sensitive and how we're trying to understand someone's really unique and sometimes debilitating condition that they have not chosen for themselves, but they're suffering with.
Matthew. You know, speaking about understanding and listening to people, a friend of mine posted this on Facebook this morning about Lil Nas X. And Steve, I know that you know that Lil Nas X is a rapper and a singer.
Almost my favorite.
I know, but for everybody else's benefit, he's an internet personality. The share was this, and if you'll let me read a part of it, y'all wrote the script. You keep telling queer kids they're going to hell. You keep weaponizing your religion. You abuse, you exploit, but some break free. They live out, they live proud, and they flip your raggedy script. Little Nas X got y'all shook because he took y'all poison and made a tonic. That's not how you want it, but you don't get to author our lives anymore. So take those clutch pearls and go to hell. I said what I said. Obviously, there's a lot of misstatements there and unfair statements. Is there anything in there that is fair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a big difference between making some kind of scientific statement that a man can actually be a woman. Like that's a bold statement that would need a lot of justification scientifically, biblically, philosophically. That's one thing. There's another thing to say, like, we should love people and listen to people and walk with people and understand who they are and not condemn them and not shame them and not make fun of them and not mock them and not, you know, those are two kind of different scenarios. You can do You can hold to just a basic biblical or even scientific view of human nature and also heed everything that I forget, Nas X, I'm not familiar with him.
Ask Steve.
I'm not a hip hop fan like Steve Brown is, but I think we can absolutely hold to a biblical view of sexuality and gender, and also love people and accept people. I know that word accept can be scary for people, but to accept their humanity, to accept their journey, to meet them where they're at. Absolutely. We can do that. And we haven't done that well all the time.
And we don't do that because we've got it together and we know our sexual identity and we're following Jesus and we're pure. I don't know anybody who can speak from that position. So there's a sense in which very messed up people in so many ways and sinful and marginalized and needy go to other people whose neediness may be different than ours, but still the same kind of stuff, and say, look, let's talk and let's walk together. That's so important. And I hope that whoever you quoted, Matthew, gets the hives. I just wanted to demonstrate love there.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate acceptance
and all that sort of thing. Kathy? No, we don't have
no.
to. Kathy will be on. It's called gender discrimination. But she will be on when we get back. And if anybody asks you what you're listening to, turn your nose up in the air, let your peacock feathers fly in the breeze, and say, I'm listening to Steve Brown, etc. And then say, and you're not? Dr. Preston Sprinkle is our guest. Embodied transgender identities, the church, and what the Bible has to say. This is good stuff. You stay with us. Like Jesus, we're going to return.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We're hanging out with Preston Sprinkle, author of Embodied Transgender Identities, the Church, and What the Bible Has to Say. You can keep up with him at PrestonSprinkle.com and on Twitter at Preston Sprinkle.
Preston, I think might have been moving a little bit in this direction, but if not, I'm going to go this way anyway. I think as believers, we would all theoretically make statements like, you know, as followers of Jesus, we're called to love people. We're called to love transgenders, people with same-sex attraction, bank robbers, whatever it is, we're called to love them. The problem seems to be from my watching for a lot of years within the church, that anything that deals with any kind of issue involving sex seems to fall into a completely different category. It's almost like we can forgive, like I said, bank robbers and whatever, embezzlers and on and on and on. But when it comes to anything that deals with sex, not so much. And back 50 years ago, for those of us that can go that far back, you know, the issue back then, which again in the church was a sexual issue, was, you know, people that were just heterosexual people that were having sex outside of marriage. I mean, that was just like the unpardonable thing. I mean, the standard, the way people were dealt, you know, the way it, within the church, the way people were dealt with, it was just so totally different. And then as the years have gone, you know, then we get to the, you know, then we get to the heterosexual versus homosexual. Now we get into transgender and all of that. And how do we deal with this? What do we do that not only helps us to understand what to do in this particular situation, but how do we change the trajectory or whatever of this to get off this path?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if there's a simple answer to that. On the one hand, you know, sex is obviously a very powerful thing, and the Bible does speak frequently and seriously about sexual immorality. But what I love about the Bible is it talks about sexual immorality as a broad category, including same sex, bisex, you know, straight sexual sins. It levels the playing field. And what's fascinating is, you know, you have five statements in the Bible that explicitly mention and prohibit same sex sexual relationships. There's five, in every one of those five passages, they also prohibit all kinds of other straight sexual sins. And so rather than looking down our self-righteous noses at those who are, you know, struggling worse than we are, we should come at it as one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread, right? As one sexually broken sinner saying, man, I've not lived up to this standard, and here's the verses why. In fact, it's the same verses that say that people who are, you know, same sex attracted are also equally failing to live up to the standard. So, yeah, I think having a lot more humility and authenticity about our own brokenness, and also I think there's, because the issue, especially LGBTQ related questions, have become so politicized in culture, that Christians can often take their cues from the broader culture, their favorite political party or political pundit or news reporter or whatever, and they allow that person to sort of feed their affections or provide the lenses through which they understand this conversation. And we need to just get rid of that and just look at Jesus and say, Jesus was the full perfect embodiment of both grace and truth. He had a high ethical standard. It was so high that he had to walk out of a grave for us to attain it. But he also loved people, especially those who were violating that ethical standard. And thank God he did, because that's how we got into the kingdom. He loved us when we were falling short of his standard. So having that grace truth posture, especially towards the LGBT conversation, is not something we've done well, but it's something we absolutely need to do.
Preston, you have. You haven't compromised anything in this book. You really haven't. That's the reason I like the book so much. And yet, throughout the book, I meet your friends. I mean, genuine friends, deep friends, who disagree with everything that you stand for. You model for us what you just told us to do.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I try. I don't do it well all the time. I've had people say, wow, this book is a lot more conservative than I was expecting. And other people say, wow, this book is a lot more liberal than I was expecting. But that's, most books I write have that kind of response from two different people. But I truly believe we can hold, like, courageously and publicly hold true to what God says about both sexual ethics and human nature. I think we can do that boldly, courageously, but I also think we can love and truly love and learn from people who may disagree with everything that we say. They're still created in God's image. They still have something to contribute. We can learn from them. And if we have enough humility, we can let them help us be a better person too. So I think just having that posture is key.
That is so good. And the surprise, when you do that, and I'm sure that's been true with Preston, is that you have friends you didn't know you had. People you can walk with that you didn't know you could walk with. And we need to work on that and encounter some of the surprises of people who are different than us. I'm too old, so I'm preaching at you. I'm not going to change. People have tried forever, really spiritual people, and have failed. So I just deal with it. I'm gonna shut up. He was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Hey, guys, we're so glad you're here. We're talking to biblical scholar, speaker, author Preston Sprinkle, one of our favorite people. And I've told this is a book you really need to get. You need to get it, and you need to read it, and you need to be aware. It's titled Embodied, Transgender Identities, the Church, and What the Bible Has to Say. And Matthew is just holding it up to the camera in his nicotine-free hands.
Preston, well, a couple of kind of very different directions, questions come to mind. But one, and maybe this is an opportunity to again kind of reinforce some of the terminology. You said several times throughout the book, when you've met one trans person, you've met one trans person, that there's a whole lot of variety and differences and uniquenesses. And it almost comes down to, okay, well, what we're doing is talking about individuals and their unique experience. But you talked about the biological sex, and especially that was reinforced in the creation discussion, and then the gender identity, which is distinct and can be consistent or inconsistent, and then the intersexual
circle
issue.
Back.
And I'm wondering if that Jesus discussion on the eunuch kind of fits into helping to maybe redefine some of those terms.
The eunuch passage often comes up. This is Matthew 19, verse 12, where Jesus mentions the eunuch, and obviously you have the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts 8. But Jesus in Matthew 19 mentions three different kinds of eunuch: the born eunuch, the one who's made a eunuch, and one who chooses to be a eunuch. It's the first two that kind of raise questions about what does it mean to be born a eunuch and what does it mean to be made a eunuch. Well, both of those categories have to do with some, I'll say, atypical feature in somebody's sexual anatomy, whether somebody was castrated, you know, most of the time against their will, or maybe they were born with some kind of abnormality in their sexual anatomy. And that would probably be similar to what we would call today as an intersex person, somebody who's born with a medical condition whereby there's some kind of atypical feature in their sexual anatomy. It's important to understand that, I mean, eunuchs, intersex people, this is a different category than transgender. I mean, trans has to do with somebody who's clearly either biological male or female, who doesn't identify or resonate with or experiences some level of distress over their biological sex. But that has to do more with the mind than the body. We are dealing with different things. Sometimes people collapse them together, and I think that can be helpful. I've heard people say, you know, we should accept trans people because look at the eunuch. I'm like, well, I believe we should accept all people. That doesn't solve the question of what does it mean to be male or female. And also the eunuch is kind of a different category. Mm. So just to map one on the other, I think is unhelpful.
Yeah. Well, and again, just kind of reinforcing some of those different you know, terms and categories, and trying to apply it to a particular issue that comes up a lot. What about, you know, well, men in particular saying they identify as women and participating in women's sports?
Yeah, that's a hot one. Yeah, you know, I actually didn't deal with that too much in my book. For one, it's still kind of a moving conversation, and I wanted to stay out of more broader political conversations and focus more on the church. But this involves the church too. And so the biggest question, there's several questions. The main one is, should sports be divided based on gender identity, which is defined as one's internal sense of who they are, or should it be based on biological sex? And this assume, you know, there is also another question, does being biologically male give humans a physical advantage over biological females? Now, the clear to most people, I'm just going to say it because I think it's, you know, I believe the earth is round and not flat. I also believe that being biologically male does give
Wait a minute. The world is...
You didn't really lose flat earthers?
We'll cover that later, George. Lost all your flat earthers.
Okay. Sorry. Get the geologist back on.
It's not... It should not be disputed that being biologically male gives you a physical advantage over females. That does not mean males are better than or, you know, more significant than. It just means that God created us with certain biological differences. So... I do think that it's going to be not good for society if we base these sports divisions based on one's internal sense of who they are. Like, I just think that's not just, it's not just because I'm a Christian and I want to be biblical. It's like, that's just unscientific. Like that's, mm-hmm. And it's actually dehumanizing and in some ways dangerous towards women. And so it's like, you can't, are we going to be good feminists and stand up for women's rights and spaces right. like Jesus, I think, would have. I think it's here's two things, though, to note. One major one is that we should not use the sports thing, which can be really maddening for a lot of people. We can't use that as our only lens through which to view the trans conversation. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of trans people who are biological males who want to push their way into, you know, female sports. Like, that's a tiny percentage. So if you just get angry at the sports thing and that's your contribution to the conversation, you're not doing it well. Like, we need to understand that this has been highly politicized. It is significant. I don't want to deny the significance, but there's loads of trans people out there that don't fit that kind of narrative. So let's not collapse it all, you know, together into one athletic conversation.
Right. Well, and coming back again, just to reinforce the phrase you've repeated, when you've met one trans person, you've met one trans person.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch the alliances that have come out of that tiny issue that you spoke of when you were saying you got an atheist lesbian feminist who is joining hands with somebody who's to the right of Genghis Khan, and they're standing together on, you know, this may be the beginning of a whole new movement. You don't know, but it does make for strange bedfellows.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the, feminists who are saying, you know, we fought hundreds of years to get equal women's rights. And they will say, these are their words, not mine. Once again, we have males dominating females again. Huh. And they mean biological males, not people who identify as such.
Yeah. Preston, we're out of time, and I don't know where we got to do a third program on this issue. You are a delight, and you're my hero. Thank you for writing this book. And the name of the book, don't forget, Embodied Transgender Identities, the Church and What the Bible Has to Say. Get it. And Preston, again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You guys are a thoughtful, fun bunch.
Guys, we're going to come back and for a short period and tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. Just sit tight. You'll be surprised. I'm pleased. Maybe.
Maybe.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
For the last hour, if you've been with us, it's been very interesting and very informative. And Preston is always that way. You know, when you're as old as I am, you don't change very much. And man, everything has changed. I can remember when this, I didn't even know what transgender meant. And all of a sudden, and I mean, it happens fast, not just this issue, but a thousand other issues. And we learned today, again, what we already knew, that no matter what the changes in the people, we're here for them. And we need to remember that. We're not here to win arguments. We're not here. And I love debate. And I'm good at it, frankly. But Jesus told me to shut up. We're not here to prove how righteous and good we're here for them. And there's a bunch of strained thems. We got to learn to love and to be sensitive. And to listen. And Preston not only writes well, he lives well. You know, you noticed if you listened that he didn't compromise anything. I mean, he was clear on what the scripture has to say and how science speaks to these issues. And yet, throughout his book, he talks about the close friends that he has that are transgender and how he shared portions of his book with those friends. Man, I can learn from that, and you can too. Love them anyway. Gigi Graham told me one time that she talked to her father, and she said, "We decided that you're going to leave everything else alone and just love people. You don't have to fix them." That's true. The fixing is way above our pay level. And Jesus gets involved in that. Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
Next week, our friend Eric Metaxas is going to be with us. And, you know, after you write an exhaustive book on Luther and one on Bonhoeffer and everything, I guess the only thing left to do is to write a book titled Fish Out of Water, which is a memoir about yourself, a search for the meaning of life. So I guess we'll find out.
And he's written a lot of humorous books, too.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has.
He's an interesting
guy. Flat Earth
guy.
The week after that?
Do what?
Flat Earth the week after that?
Yeah. Flat Earth is the week after that, Jinx.
If we don't fall off the edge.
We're finished. We're done. Put a fork in us. We're out of here. But we're going to come back next week. Same time, same place. And it's our fond hope that you join us. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't, and that gives you a wide, wide berth.